This is WHFR Dearborn. And now for the next hour, our local public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal here on WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. Today is October the 9th, 2009, and we're continuing right at the top of the hour here our series of interviews with the challengers for the Dearborn City Council that will be elected. Seven of them will be elected, seven out of 14, on November the 3rd. So that election is coming up quickly. If you're not registered to vote, shame on you. There's no hope now, but why not do it in advance of whenever next time is? Never know when a special election might come up, you know. And, of course, absentee ballots are already being sent out. And if you cannot be in town or during the day, can't get to the polls on November the 3rd, remember, you can go to the city clerk's office at Dearborn City Hall and get an absentee ballot. You can pick it up yourself. You can also call them, and they will send it to you in the mail, and then you have to send it back. I think they have to send you a request form. And then you send that back, and then they'll send you the ballot. If you have to do the absentee ballot thing, remember our recommendations here. And again, the opinions expressed on this show are ours only, not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. But our advice is wait until you can get the most possible information. In other words, the last minute, I think, to send back that ballot would be the Friday before on November 3rd, or you could take it to their office, I think, on November 2nd, to the city clerk's office, and turn it in yourself. But the point is, as much information as you can get about all the candidates. The incumbents, you probably know who they are and heard about them and have an idea of what they're good for. And the challengers, that's why we're doing our series of interviews here with almost all the challengers. Till have two that seem resistant. I think they're afraid to come in and have me grill them here at our non-commercial station. But today we have with us Brian C. O'Donnell, who is one of those challengers and a very brave person, too. Let's talk to him now. Brian, why don't you start by telling us about yourself, your background, life experience, education, those kinds of basic things just to get started.
Well, my name is Brian O'Donnell. I grew up in Dearborn Heights. I attended Divine Child High School. Actually, from there, I attended Henry Ford Community College for 1 year. I tell everybody if I had a bigger brain at the time, I would have stayed another year instead of leaving after one.
But we have so many classes.
From there, ended up with a degree in biology from Madonna University. Uh-huh. Bought my first house in Dearborn. Went back to school. I got my master's in business administration. Was married. I have a child. We're expecting a daughter in the first couple weeks of December, which we're very excited about. With respect to the city and running, you know, I have three sisters. We're in the area. I think that as you start paying more attention to your surroundings and you start seeing the inner workings of the city, it's very natural to want to get more involved. And through that process, I joined a few different organizations. And so now running for council is kind of a natural progression from those involvements.
Well, it's a great community service. We need good people at all levels, school board, and certainly Dearborn City Council. The bad news is it's not a full-time job.
Right.
There's no health insurance offered, but you already have that. You're in the healthcare industry. Is that where you have a job right now? Is it insurance or hospital-related?
Actually, it's in the drug industry.
Pharmaceutical. Yes. I forgot about them. We need them too.
Yes, okay. We do. And actually, it's very nice for me to be able to say that I work for a company, and I'm proud to work for a company that not only provides wonderful medicine, but provides it at a wonderful cost to make sure that people improve and enhance their life. So it makes me feel very good to work for a good company.
It's not free yet, though. No.
Okay.
maybe the government. Maybe I should ask you about that. We have been covering, by the way, just as an aside here, we've been covering the healthcare issue because so many people are concerned about it all over the country, and of course Congress trying to see what they can do here. Certainly in Dearborn, our population is over half the population is over the age of 50, and therefore at least if they're into their 60s, they have Medicare, which is pretty good at paying for most expenses. In fact, the Dearborn Press and Guide just did, I think this week was the second week of a survey about national healthcare questions. I didn't like it that much because all the key topics that they had three people respond to, sort of one side, the other side, and sort of supposedly unbiased in the middle. The questions were all about things that are missed, that don't exist, like death panels and things. And so just mentioning those as questions that should be asked, I thought was the wrong thing to do, because somebody's bound to read the question and think, oh, yeah, that is an issue, those death panels, where they don't exist at all. So, oh, well. But would your company, do you think, just one brief answer here, we'll get on to this, because this I have to tell you, it does sort of affect the city council because Dearborn Mayor O'Reilly has indicated that in terms of budget issues, the biggest thing is health insurance costs for the city.
Right.
He was hoping the state would do something. There is a proposal from Representative Dillon in Dearborn Heights to sort of lump together all the public school teachers, all the fire and police, too, throughout the state into one plan. That would take the burden off the city, at least in terms of those employees. Or if there was universal single-payer health care plan in the U.S., which is not currently being discussed at all, like other countries, then the city would also save a ton of money. So how do you stand on that, just very briefly? And maybe you want to give just one or two reasons, but just because you're with the healthcare industry and they'll be impacted maybe by some of these changes. Your company is probably against any change. I mean, status quo is what they know, right?
No, believe it or not, the conversations that I've had, now granted, there's a very different opinions who you talk to.
Many different opinions.
I think that there is some common ground with respect to the fact that in this country there should be more adequate coverage for those that don't have it.
Oh, yeah.
From
yeah.
a company perspective, a drug industry perspective, I know if you have a lot of patients that are going to be insured or at some point in some way that haven't previously, that's actually going to be a positive thing. And, you know, we know the government contracts are going to be such that it's going to be a very, very low price, just above break even. But the bottom line is I think everyone is looking for solutions to make sure that there's a lot more coverage than currently exists.
Yeah.
And I think that the way that that's going to come about is still there's lots of debate on that. Mm-hmm. But I think that generally speaking, it's going to be a very good thing all the way around.
And therefore, it probably would be a good thing for Dearborn. I mean, if they can save money or keep the cost from going up as a major component of their salary expenses, at least for the full-time people.
I agree 100%. And when you look at the increase every year with the retirees and the current employees' health care costs, getting those off the books or at least minimizing those to the greatest degree would definitely help out putting those resources to other areas.
Okay, just going back to your bio for a second, you said your bachelor's degree was in biology.
Correct.
And MBA is obviously business. I figured that one out for myself.
Good job.
Was that also from Madonna, did you say?
No, that was from Baker College.
Baker College,
yep.
Okay. One of our big business schools locally here. Okay, well, that's good. You know something about business, so you know how to read the city budget, which I understand now is online. I've been scared to even take a look, but they put the city budget, I guess for the current year, whatever they've approved, and you can actually go over it, but it's got to be a multi-page document. I mean,
I just saw it is on the cityofdearborn.org website. It'll
right.
say 2010 budget.
Right.
It's available. So.
Yeah, I would think that most people can't quite understand a lot of the aspects of the way the things are stated in the budget. And even if there is a line that says something that has dollars there, there's not a lot of explanation, is there, about what that really is?
Exactly.
What the details
Which
are.
Which makes it a little difficult to read unless you're really paying attention and or attending the meetings, committee of the whole meetings, city council meetings, to find out what's
right.
What means what. So.
That's an important revelation. I assume all of our council candidates, all the challengers, realize what they might be getting into. It's more than just the public city council meetings.
Oh, yeah. There's quite a few other commitments are going to be needed to really do your due diligence and do a good job. It's not just a show once or twice a week. However, it's definitely going to be much more than that, and something that I'm more than willing to participate in.
Besides all of the small business openings where you have to go and stand for that picture to be taken, they try to get most of the council members together, and I'm thinking these people need day jobs in order to survive, and I wonder how hard that is to schedule, get everybody there for that that ribbon cutting thing. But unfortunately for Dearborn, there's not that many, and we can talk about that. So, okay, well, it's great that you have that much educational background, and especially in business and healthcare, which are issues that matter a lot. Some people on the present council, they were outvoted, but they weren't really in favor of the Montgomery Ward development. That's the new Redico Oakwood plus
Midwest Health
plan, because the people going there are sick or need treatment or whatever, and they're not going to stay around and shop. It's not going to be necessarily a magnet or an increase in the amount of traffic in that area for other businesses. Nonetheless, it went ahead, and one of the things we do here on this show is ask you where you stand on the issues, and so what about that East Dearborn development situation? Some business is better than none in that location. This is a multi-million dollar project, certainly.
Right, and being at a few of those meetings and hearing the debates, it seemed like at the very end it was kind of a situation where things had to be done in a pretty rapid succession. And I also know that things were kind of changing as decisions were being made. Early on there was some retail, then that was pulled back. I know some of the councilmen were bringing up other suggestions to use for that property, but ultimately it went this way. And you know, I'm really trying hard to, when you drive your car, you're not looking in the rearview mirror, right? You're looking forward.
Yeah.
So what we do have is what's there, and to maximize that, to make it the best it can be, I don't know all the pertinent information with the numbers and things that had happened to get to that decision, but it's there now. It's nice to have tax base there. I think that folks there are going to go to some degree to restaurants or travel, yeah. But we have it, and now we're going to make the best of it and move forward.
I think if the businesses there are successful and they go to the complete extent of the plan, and this might be 5 years away, that they might actually build some apartments or condos too as part of the project. So you could live there and get your health care right next door, I guess. that would certainly help the city with a few more residents living right there close to Michigan Avenue, I guess. But now, of course, there's the problem of when Midwest Healthcare moves in, you've got a vacancy, a fairly large area up on Schaefer to fill. So that's always an issue. You've been mentioning with your answers, you have been attending the city council meetings then.
I try to get to most of them. If I can't, I get to watch them on the computer. But yep. I just think that it's important to kind of see how things work and the dynamics.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of procedural things, to be honest with you, that you start really learning how they work. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that the experience of attending and really seeing the dynamic, the interplay, has been something that's been positive for me to do. So.
Probably some of those incumbents will be coming back again, either on name recognition only or because the public knows their background and likes them or whatever. So it's good to see what they're like in those council meetings and the on cable TV. It is usually one of the most boring shows ever, except when maybe Doug Thomas gets going.
Definitely livens up things a little bit.
Well, we've had him here on the show several times, not in this series, of course, and it's amazing, and it doesn't come across on the cable meetings because he didn't have time enough to say more than just topic sentence here or there, but at extended interviews, he's got tremendous knowledge of all his years of service at Dearborn. He's got facts and figures that he goes to. So he may disagree with his conclusions, but he's got the facts about these things. We're going to West Dearborn now, and one of the issues there that I saw in your League of Women Voters a brief summary that's on League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights website is that we have to fix paid parking. That's in, well, right now there's only paid parking in West Dearborn area. How do you want to fix it?
Well, there's going to have to be some type of a solution here, because what's currently out there, nobody's really happy with. We do know that the two parking structures, the debt service on those two parking structures is quite substantial, and the thought of taking that money out of the general fund right now doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So what is going to be a happy medium? There needs to be some resolution. I know that the parking task force currently is implementing suggestions such as, Sunday evenings free parking. I've been doing a little reading or talking to some folks as I'm out in the neighborhood, and you come up with some good ideas. Couple, maybe even during lunch, do a couple hours of free parking at lunch or in the structures to get more usage. I also had another resident come up with a good idea. He thought for, a few months, just offer free parking totally and see if that changes any of the foot traffic, and maybe once and for all be able to end this debate on is it causing, is it not causing. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is somebody's going to have to pay for this. I do know that when the council and the parking task force went back and looked at the old way of doing it, the special assessment district, now the number would be very, very high based on the debt on the structure. So there's a compromise out there that everyone's going to be happy with. Actually, once there's some buildings between the two parking structures that is going to be having lots of monthly parking passes that'll eliminate the need for a lot of this other paid parking or give you some flexibility, things will definitely be better. But in the meantime, we have to find a way to fund the debt service on those two structures.
Mentioning the building between those two structures. By the way, folks, we're here at the new WHFR Journal today talking to Dearborn City Council Challenger. Not an incumbent, but he's a new person, and his name is Brian C. O'Donnell. That's who we're talking about. O capital D-O-N-N-E-L-L, by the way, if you're looking for it on the ballot. There's a lawsuit currently between the city of Dearborn and Burton Katzman, of course. The city is basically asking for about $17 million to offset the land, the unconstructed buildings. Part of the suit probably is just the upset of the city when they discovered that Burton Katzman all of a sudden didn't exist, and I'm not sure. Apparently, the judge has already ruled favorably on most of these things, but he has delayed for another month his final ruling. Wants to hear a few more details, I think, about these things. What would you do if we did win $17 million or settle out of court $12 million? Okay, that goes to the city probably, not necessarily West Dearborn. How would you use that? Just put it in the kitty for a rainy day fund, which is, I understand the rainy day fund at the city is getting pretty low.
I heard that too, but I think just a couple things. One, as I just mentioned, paying off a good chunk of that debt on the two parking structures would then totally open up other avenues for the paid parking and really be able to make some adjustments there. Two, I do think that there's going to have to be some type of incentive, some seed money to get some new businesses here. And then the last is going to be to put some of it in the rainy day fund. Yeah. I think that the CSO project...
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I think we're going to need to have some capital reserves moving forward to make sure we don't have to do too many deep cuts down the road if something should present itself that's going to require infusion of cash.
Yeah, I hope, especially since the towers are not much used, the parking towers in West Dearborn there, and there are two of them. Doug Thomas the last time around, he mentioned, and I hadn't thought of this, why two? Isn't one enough to get started with? But we thought two would be, the future need, and there would be a hotel or something in between those two buildings that there would be the use. And, of course, bad economic times, not as many people going out shopping anyway now. But, yeah, let's get out of that debt as much as possible, although maybe some of that money, whatever there is, and I really think from what I've read is we'll get a settlement out of this, whether maybe out of court or maybe the judge will give a nice chunk of that $17 million directly to Dearborn, so we hope for that. You mentioned the CSO. It's on my list with past issues, ongoing issues. I noticed at the last debate, and I think it's the one that the League of Women Voters put together, this issue came up. And, of course, we're into it. We can't do anything differently now. It's federally mandated to do something about wastewater overflow. But, the original project, when it was approved, was like $310 million, which is quite a chunk. But I've heard rumors that because of, I mean, we got several lawsuits that we're defending against and lawsuits that relate to it that we're, you know, trying to get money back from other constructors. And there's still a lot of construction going on, still certain problems with certain construction sites. So there's some cost increases that it might be $400 million or $500 million when we get done with this. It was rumored, and you may not know this, but it was pretty solid rumor that Mayor Guido even said that, gee, when people finally realize how much they're going to have to pay on this, this is before they had to start paying on this, he would be ousted as mayor because it would get blamed on him. Well, of course, he's not with us anymore. Rest in peace and all that. But I've got to correct one thing. I just got to tell you, at least, is that I talked to engineers years ago, one running for mayor even. If we would have, there was cheaper ways to get into this.
Right.
And the city went for almost the highest ticketed way. And the former public works director had no background as an engineer. Telecom person. I'm sorry, I'm a telecom person too. But he didn't have that background. So he was sort of victim to the engineers. And the one proposal that would have only cost, only, he says, $200 million. So at least a third less or more in the long run, were open evaporation pit pool areas, but it would have required sacrificing two of the 18 holes at the Herndon Golf Course.
Okay, I didn't hear that one.
Yeah, and I had engineers, people that work in this, that said, yeah, it's fine. The problem is, well, that golf course is making us money, and I guess golfers don't like to do nine holes twice. They like the full, unique separate 18 holes. I mean, it would just be a killer to a golfer to think I only get 16 holes or I got to play nine holes twice. And but as I said, that's making a little money for us and it's a nice public resource. But to save $100 million for the city, or because of the complexity of this thing, it's going to be maybe $400 or $500 million, what I understand, by the time we get it done. Well, as a non-golfer, I would have gone that way. But for all these quotes in there, well, it's true, nothing to do now. I mean, we're into this. We got to get out of it somehow. And it's going to be extremely costly. But there were other suggestions earlier on, and they didn't take them. And I think this was just a golfer bias.
Well, it's not even just a golfer bias. I know. First of all, let's not... forget.
I'm not putting down golfers.
The bottom line is raw sewage going into the water is not something we want to do. So I'm happy that something's being done. Yeah. Now, the implementation of the way that they decided to use this, these sinking caissons, was really an unproven technology in this type of a project. Mm-hmm. It's been said that the second or third person that uses new technology benefits. The first person usually runs into trouble, overruns, some issues. So I do know that now the mayor is going back to the Department of Environmental Quality. And the original design was for a system that could hold, let's say, a 100-year storm. Now they're going back to a 10-year storm. So perhaps what we do have online is going to be enough. And if that's the case, that'll be a saving grace.
But some of the areas may not have to be constructed.
Fully, correct. And I also have heard, and I may be incorrect, but the idea of the sinking caissons was to minimize the disruption above ground. Some of the other areas that have been also mandated to do this project have decided on a little more use technology, but there's a little more of a footprint above the ground. So this was an attempt to kind of preserve some of those areas, but I think that just, you know, taking a chance at a very unproven technology has really proven costly to the city and something we're not done with yet.
Let's move on. We have about 10 minutes left in your 30-minute interview time, but a lot more time than you ever get in these debates where
yes,
they give
sure.
you three or four minutes each.
And goes fast.
You're practicing your 30-second sound bites, though, I bet, every night. That's too bad. In terms of new ideas, let's jump there. And these are things that have been proposed or they're already kind of getting started up. If you can briefly say what you think of them and where you stand on them. Intermodal train station.
I think that'd be wonderful. You know, having a conversation with some folks, I can imagine the city of Dearborn, you know, progress is going to be a little bit challenging to some people. It's going to be different and new, but I really see the city moving forward as a special place. I see U of M Dearborn creating some residence halls, a high-speed rail down to Detroit, to Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. You could, you know, foot traffic along Michigan Avenue. You could really start to see the city becoming something that we all want it to be. And frankly, that gets me really excited to think about. And I think that the intermodal train station is going to be one of the centerpieces of that project.
The Fairlane Town Center Conference Center, supposedly extra auditoriums, larger facilities that the hotels around Fairlane Town Center can't currently provide to therefore bring in larger conferences.
Well, in the news a few weeks ago, did you happen to notice that Detroit is benefiting from the conference, the economic downturn, because a lot of folks are saying that, you know, going to these exotic locales anymore doesn't look prudent to the investor, so they're using a little more regional locations. I don't have all the facts and figures on the conference center. I would have to see the numbers and what our the city's outlay would be. I do think, though, it does kind of fall in line. We're very geographically close to the airport. There is no regional conference center currently. You know, the Henry Ford, the restaurants, the culture, the activities we have here, this could be another piece to the puzzle of really transforming Dearborn into a city we can all really be proud of moving forward.
Yeah, I have to say the Fairlane Town Center, and I'm one of those senior-type mall walkers, so I'm over there several times a week, especially on a day like today. By golly, they lost even several vendors in the food court area. I mean, the lowest price food area, and a couple of them already gone. A new shop comes back, but they're still losing vendors, losing stores over there. So maybe a conference center, if it was well publicized, really worked out, would give more business to the town center too. So many large shopping complexes in metro areas across the U.S. have had to close. Simply close. And I'm not saying Fairlane had to happen that way, but every now and then I go out to the Apple store. I'm an Apple computer person. We have Apple computers in the station. The Macintosh is here. But the Apple store is in the 12 Oaks, yes. And 12 Oaks has all the stores and shops and more that Fairlane had when it first opened. I mean, all the specialty shops, full range from luxury to bottom line, national brands, and it's almost always crowded. Now, of course, that's the rich northwest suburbs out there, I guess. Although I don't think anybody's that rich these days. But there's something that's lacking here, and maybe it's just foot traffic. There's just not that many bodies that are shopping there. Can something be done about telling the people of Dearborn that it is safe to go to Fairlane Town Center? I've read somewhere, I never shop there. Well, yeah, people come from Detroit. People come from all around. But I'm there, like, every day. Is that a city council issue?
Well, I think that promoting the city and highlighting the city is what the city council can do. But with respect to safety, I mean, we do have a world-class police department and fire. You know, I think that sometimes it takes a little bit of time in order to get people's perception and reality in the same path. So maybe some kind of a way of promoting some folks to get down there for an event, per se.
Yeah, maybe have your city council meeting at Fairlane Town Center.
That's an idea. In the food court.
They got some unused areas, let me tell you. Yeah, right out in public. What the heck? I mean, they've got other areas. They redid their pond, and they do keep it, for those people listening, they keep it well-maintained. There's security guards all over the place. The floors are always crystal clear and clean, you know. I mean, it's they're putting the money in the management of that facility, which is not a city facility, you know, but it's a private facility. But, I don't understand that fear factor thing on the part of some of the people in Dearborn. Maybe they... again, it's just bad press or something.
And habits.
City
people need
might be
to
able
change
to turn
their
that
habits
around.
Sometimes, yeah. Too. I think that you get in the habit of doing something a certain way. Sometimes it's difficult to move it forward and have them changing in a different direction. Maybe there's something along the lines we could do to kind of entice them.
Jumping on, I got a couple other crazy ideas here. But one, Mayor Riley said, especially if some money came his way from the federal government, whether it's the stimulus money or whatever, wind turbines along the Rouge. Building several towers of general electricity just for the city of Dearborn. Apparently Wyandotte has some electrical production that the city, I mean, producing electricity for the city.
That would actually be pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Also, they had another idea I heard was that there's new technologies that are available now of using the waste to produce methane gas, which then is burned to turn turbines, and actually a lot of that power is sold back to the grid or used locally. So there are the new technologies... obviously are going to be something that need to be explored and looked at and found to be economical and feasible. Of course, you got to take care of the surroundings.
What about Wi-Fi for the city? I mean, right now, West Dearborn, and I don't think East Dearborn businesses have a have a network among themselves where you can use your computer wireless in it. I understand the original cost a couple of years ago was like only $2 million. I say only.
Right.
But once it's in, it's pretty much maintenance-free. I mean, there's some cost, but it's just wireless little things all over town. That would save a lot of people in their homes the need to get Comcast or AT&T or whatever internet connections. It's a little bit slower. The cable is a little bit faster, but sure, it's a little bit slower, saving the taxpayers of Dearborn a lot of money. I probably would have to go up for a vote of the taxpayers or something. But, you know, I was thinking about this, politics, everything. I believe in the Comcast and even the WOW Wide Open West contracts, that they kick back a percentage of their cost to the city coffers.
Okay.
So that might be less if they're not selling internet service. So I don't know. Bike paths for commuting. You know, there's no way to ride to East and West Dearborn. Well, right now the sidewalk is under construction, too. There's only one sidewalk to get to East and West Dearborn. But for commuting, not maybe today, but in good weather. Well, you know, and it's really sad. They're redoing Michigan Avenue, and I don't know who's in charge of that, probably the state. But where are the bike paths? Why can't there be bike paths? Henry Ford, the Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village down there, they have bike paths on their private roads. They have them marked. You know, duh, is that because they're connected with the 19th century and they remember people used to ride bikes more then? Or, I mean, why can't the city, and for that matter, Wayne County and the state of Michigan, get into this? I mean, we would save so much energy, and it would be good healthy, from a health perspective, and good weather to ride a bike if you're only going 3 to 5 miles. But if there's a bike path or whatever, and it's not like this mayor Guido said, oh, yeah, there's a bike path up there right behind you, you know, through the forest and so on. And I've been on that because I live in East Dearborn, so it's no good to me. It doesn't really connect. And it meanders. You know, it's lovely for recreation, but it's not for transportation, and I feel that I'm going to die every time I try to ride past Fairlane Town Center to get to Henry Ford Community College, even though I easily could do it, but I'm afraid to do that, except on Sundays when there's less traffic. Okay, we got to end this up, but any ideas for budget cuts? Boy.
Well, I have one good idea, and it's going to surprise some listeners. I am on record as stating that I'm going to give back 25% of my salary for all 4 years to do my part to get things moving. Right now, the city is taking in much less revenue. Our expenses are still growing. We've got to find ways of getting more with less. And so I think that starting with myself first as a indication of where my head's at, and also letting the voters know that this isn't about personal financial gain. I'm not a wealthy individual, but you know what? The idea of serving the city and everyone tightening their belts a little bit for the greater good is something that I'm more than happy to do, and I'm going to encourage the other folks to do the same.
Brian, we're going to sum up now. Going to give you like a minute or two. We're kind of you know, always flexible here at WHFR since we don't have to do commercials. To sum up your position and why people should vote for you, but this is Brian C. O'Donnell we have with us today, folks. And if people want, let's do this right now. If they want more information about your campaign, would you like to share a phone number? I don't know if you have a website. Is there a fundraising event coming up for you that we can talk about? How could they get more information either about your candidacy or if they choose to do it, decide to help you?
Okay, sure. Thank you. And that's a very important thing you brought up as well. Availability, accessibility is something that many of the citizens have talked about, and that's something that is not going to stop if elected. My cell phone number is 313-300-8845. I have a website, which is peopleforbrianodonnell.com, and then email very simply, brian@peopleforbrianodonnell.com.
So we don't use that middle initial C. So peopleforbrianodonnell.com, okay, and just brian@peopleforbrianodonnell.com. Okay, gotcha. And we'll repeat that later at the end of our show. Sum up, why Brian C. O'Donnell, why now?
I'm a City Beautiful Commissioner. I am the Vice President of the Dearborn Federation of Neighborhood Associations. I've learned quite a bit about the city, what's right, what's wrong. During one of the last debates, a current councilman actually stated, we need fresh ideas on council. And at the time I said it, and I'll say it again, I couldn't agree with him more. Anytime you have the same pot of ideas that are being drawn from, they need to be infused with some new, fresh ideas. That's what I'm bringing, a new perspective, new energy, new vitality. I have the education, I have the experience to serve the city, and it's if we're all happy with the way things are going, then by all means, continue to vote the current members in. If you'd like to see a change in your taxes, your home values, the way that the CSO has been implemented, the business districts, parking, and then you'll be like me and think it's time for a change. And I'm just going to ask you to consider Brian O'Donnell come November 3rd.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Brian C. O'Donnell, one of the challengers for a seat on the Dearborn City Council, the election coming up November 3rd. Again, here at WHFR, we don't support any candidates in particular, but we do wish you well with getting the message out and letting people know what you think is most important so they can make a really good informed decision on November 3rd. And by the way, thank you for running for council.
No, and thank you for the opportunity. There's very few opportunities to actually sit down and have a conversation. I really appreciate the opportunity and for everyone listening as well. Thank you.
At least we can do. And if people are just catching this right now, remember broadcast on Friday. This entire show is available as a podcast to download separately anytime after 2 o'clock today, October the 9th. And you can hear Brian C. O'Donnell again. And in the past, we've had five other Fridays that we've had council candidates here, or four other council candidates so far. So check out our website, whfr.fm, and click on the journal button at the appropriate and the appropriate date after that. Thank you, Brian. We'll have some messages here and more information about Dearborn and the surrounding area coming back on the new WHFR Journal right after these messages, including two special commentaries from Jim Hightower today.
If ignorance is bliss, the corporate chieftains of the Hyatt hotel chain must be ecstatic. They pulled a low-down sneaky trick on 98 of Hyatt's housekeeping staff in three Boston hotels, thinking that no one would notice, care, or do anything. They badly underestimated Bostonians. In August, housekeepers at the three hotels were asked to train some new workers to fill in when regulars were sick or on vacation. On August 31st, however, the experienced staff, many of whom have worked for Hyatt for more than 20 years, were blindsided by a rude truth. They had been duped. Management told them they were fired as of that day. It turns out that the workers they had been training would replace them. These replacements are employees of an outsourcing corporation called Hospitality Staffing Solutions of Georgia, whose honcho asserts that his workers are paid, quote, competitive wages. Yeah, competitive with poverty. Indeed, Hyatt's longtime housekeepers were earning $14 to $16 an hour, plus health care and pension benefits. The Staffing Solutions workers, however, get a miserly $8 an hour with zero benefits. Bostonians are in an uproar. There have been mass demonstrations in front of Hyatt's hotels. The governor has directed state agencies to stop doing business with Hyatt. Even the Chamber of Commerce has moved a scheduled meeting from the Hyatt, and the Boston Taxi Drivers Association intends to boycott the three hotels. Meanwhile, Hyatt executives are claiming that replacing the workers was an essential cost-cutting move. Really? Where's Mark Hoplamazian, Hyatt's CEO, who grabbed $6.7 million in pay last year? If he cut his pay by about $1.5 million, that would cover the $7 an hour difference in pay between the experienced housekeepers and the replacements. Come on, Mark. Step up to your responsibilities.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Need to know? WHFR's Tuesday Talk, noon to 2 p.m., features two unique hours of information you can't get from any other Detroit radio station. Need to know about science? Hour 1 from noon to 1 p.m., we're proud to present what we believe to be the best weekly radio science show. Are We Alone? Science Radio for Thinking Species, produced by the SETI Institute and hosted by nationally noted scientist Seth Shostak. Need to know about anything else? Hour 2, 1 to 2 p.m., the WHFR Forum, a wide range of program topics locally selected and, whenever possible, locally produced and hosted, from UFOs to metaphysics to intellectual history, from ecology to health. So check out Tuesday Talk each week, noon to 2 p.m., Science Radio is also available on the internet from SETI.org/radio. For the WHFR forum shows at any time, go to our own website, WHFR.fm, and click on forum. Your need to know, our mission.
Could it be? Dare we think it? Is it possible that the Environmental Protection Agency might finally be getting serious about providing some protection for Appalachia's environment and people? For more than a decade, the ancient, serene, and beautiful mountains, valleys, and streams of central Appalachia have literally been under assault by corporate coal profiteers. Using a brutally destructive mining method called mountaintop removal, the corporations explode to bits the top third of mountains to get at the coal. Then they cavalierly bulldoze the resulting rubble and toxic coal waste down the mountainsides, filling the valleys, burying streams, poisoning the water supply, and destroying livelihoods. As mountain after mountain has been wasted, the EPA has stood silent as the Army Corps of Engineers has rubber-stamped Big Coal's selfish devastation. The whole permitting process has become toothless, says one observer. But she's not just any old observer. She's Lisa Jackson, the new head of the EPA, who recently declared, "We're going to do our jobs." Two subsequent steps suggest she might. First, the agency has preliminarily rejected the approval of 79 more mountaintop removal permits. Second, agency officials are quietly putting together a major new scientific study of the impacts that the explosive process has on streams, water quality, and aquatic life. A 2005 EPA report has already documented this devastation, but incredibly, the Bush team perverted the findings to allow more devastation. Now, however, it appears that science, nature, and people might at long last be considered and possibly, just possibly, given priority over undiluted industry greed. This is Jim Hightower saying, to stay informed on these developments and to help push for environmental sanity, go to ilovemountains.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
If ignorance. Okay, so apparently the computer here is on the repeat mode. We'll have to turn that off because we heard it already. Yeah. Okay. Welcome back to the new WHFR Journal here from Henry Ford Community College. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm station advisor, and we just got done with the Dearborn City Council challenger candidate, Brian C. O'Donnell, one of seven people. New names that are for your consideration on the November 3rd ballot here in Dearborn. We have with us in the studio, besides our news director, Dennis Reimars, who just stepped out for a minute. Dennis was here sort of escorting Mr. O'Donnell in and out of the station, just as a common courtesy. And I have with me my frequent co-host, what is his name? Ned Apigian. And Ned, welcome back today. You, besides having our Then and Now show on the fourth Tuesday, right? It's the fourth Tuesday of each month on the Forum show. Get your mic on here.
Got to turn that on.
Yes, you're on now. Yes, okay. Also, he's a candidate for council of Dearborn City, Dearborn Heights City Council. And we won't get into that now, folks, because we're not inviting the other people. But tell us just briefly, tell our listeners, what are the problems and issues of just the campaigning side? Now, you've done it a couple times in Dearborn Heights, and you're actively working on this now. What are the cost involved, first of all? Because it's not cheap.
It depends on what you want to make out of it.
Well, usually the successful people, don't they have to have a mailing?
Oh, well, you always have to mail.
Yeah.
I'm sure the
campaign brochure or something like that, yes.
Yeah. In fact, I brought mine with me to give to you, and I was going to give one to him, but I didn't get a chance to share mine with him. You can spend $10,000 to $12,000 and do an adequate job. I haven't spent that this time.
Well, it's probably more in Dearborn even because we have more residences. More homes to get the brochure to. You know how many homes or residences you have to mail to in Dearborn Heights?
There are 32,000 registered voters in Dearborn Heights.
But some of them are two to a house.
Yeah. What I usually do, and I'm surprised that some of the incumbents that, like, I got two letters from the mayor, and the mayor knows better than send two pieces of literature to one house. But
you'd think, yeah, that's a lot.
I was
of extra
surprised
cost,
when I see it for an amateur to do that. It's possible.
Well, it is easy for incumbents, or much easier for incumbents who already have name recognition and some power already to make things happen to raise money. And especially mayors. Mayors can raise more money than a city council candidate because theoretically, especially if it's a strong mayor-type organization and government, they can make more things happen. In other words, awarding contracts and not illegally, folks, but just they do have more power to make things happen and therefore benefit.
It's nice to be on the right side of the mayor. So,
yeah, yeah, if you're a business person.
When the thing that amazes me is why they hold fundraisers when they're not running. They don't have any opposition. In other words, they're on the ballot.
Well, I understand you can save the money for the next race.
Yeah, oh, yeah, not only
and
that.
And it's good. It's socializing, just good publicity for those that show up for your stalwart crew, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, no, everybody loves a good party, I guess.
That's allowed in your budgetary expenses.
So. I don't understand. Again, we've got two of the challengers for Dearborn City Council that... And we keep calling them each week. Dennis is on the phone. They have not responded. I guess they don't care about coming on this show. Brian seemed to like the opportunity. It was free. I gave him a bottle of water, too, you know, for free. And, you know, I don't know what they're afraid of. But I've gotten, in East Dearborn, I've gotten only two mailings from incumbents. Now, maybe they're waiting for something, you know, it'll be closer to November because, I mean, if you really had all the money in the world, you would have two mailings, one earlier for the people that might send in those absentee ballots right away, which, remember, folks, I don't recommend you send them back right away.
Absolutely.
You wait until you get as much information as you can. Wait until the last minute, but, of course, make sure you know what the last minute is to either take them down to City Hall or to send them back in the mail, but... You know, there's debates and everything.
Unfortunately, even the UAW that endorses candidates sends out a list of endorsed candidates, and they do it after the absentee ballots have already gone out. I can't tell you how many times I told them, why do you waste the money? So to give you an idea of what the basic expenditure is how much you're willing to spend. There's a minimum.
What about yard signs? Those are costly too, aren't they?
They cost about $500 for 300. It depends on how many you buy. So when you look at one, think about them as $2.50 each.
Yeah. Plus, but you need a committee, a group of people, or a large family that can go out, knock on doors, and find people willing to put them in their yard. Of course.
Each one of those are stories in themselves. I found that in terms of cost. The manufacturers of these things will put them together for you completely, which means you don't have to do anything.
Okay.
Or they'll sell you the pieces. They'll sell you the metal rods, and they'll sell you the paperwork, and then you do it. You will find that you just don't have the time to fool with that, so you'll just buy the complete package.
Well, I know
if you buy 1,000, you save a little money.
One of the candidates, one of the challengers that we... can't make contact with, has a big name, has a restaurant named after him in West Dearborn. He has yard signs only, apparently. That's what he's decided. I mean, I've gotten no mailing yet, although one might still come. It's still 3 weeks before the election.
Well, that's it.
You know, so if you already have name recognition, because your name's been in the community, I think 44 years. I won't mention his name, but I'm just saying it's been out there for 44 years. People have seen the restaurant and the name of it for a long time. And so maybe that's why he survived the primary. You know, he got in the top 14 out of 25.
Because of his name recognition.
But another candidate who...
Doesn't have name recognition.
Well, I think he's run before, but he's doing only some newspaper ads, and I don't know. Let me take a look.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them in the headlines of the one.
Maybe it's in the press and guide has more.
There's two in
it is. Right on. So right on the front page, and it's a good square. It's like 3 or 4 inches by 3 or 4 inches.
I've done that.
Not going to mention this person's name because they also won't come on the show, or at least have not chosen to do so yet. But that's got to be expensive.
I did one for $250, full color at the bottom corner once.
Oh, yeah.
It's not bad.
I see Tefelski is at the bottom here, but yeah. But every single issue, every week, this guy, the Challenger, and Tefelski, it's the first time I've seen his, although it might have been there before. But, you know, we're getting close to the election, so you'll have a lot more ads showing up. But this Challenger, every single week. Isn't front page more expensive than one of the back pages,
too? Yeah, that's the one you want. People see that at the top and bottom.
Yeah.
But if I can give you a little insight into it.
Yes, that's what we want.
What I've done is you go to the city clerk, and the city clerk will provide you with any kind of information you would like.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I said, I want to mail to everybody over 60. So the computer spits out the names of everybody over 60,
yeah,
because those are people that vote. Now, in this election, where there are no governor, there is no Congress, there is no senator, there is no president, you will find that the voting percentage is usually 10-11% max. But in one like this one, where it's only council and the mayor or the treasurer from your local city, you might see that election drop from 10-11 to 4-5-6%.
Uh-huh.
Well, that becomes very important. So what I've decided to do is write to only those people who voted in the last election, mm-hmm, absentee or regular, because I know those people are going to vote. Except those who may have passed or left town. But as a vast majority, you can be sure that those people are going to vote. Putting this ad in the newspaper is no guarantee that the people that are going to vote are going to vote. So you want to write to them.
There is, of course, the proposal that's been out there for a while that there should be public funding of elections. Obviously, incumbents don't like that because it puts the challengers on supposedly a level field, although it's been proven that a challenger who doesn't have name recognition has to, if they want to be much more guaranteed the election, they need to spend more. They might have to spend twice as much as an incumbent on the various aspects of campaign materials.
Incumbents have name recognition,
right,
whether they're limited in their spending or not.
So, I mean, public funding, it would seem, we'll give everybody the same amount, it'll come out of the public budget, and they can choose to spend it however they want to. And that means that the rich don't have an advantage, but unfortunately, the incumbents have a tremendous advantage. You'd almost have to for the level playing field, if there was public funding of that, to give all the challengers twice as much money. And, of course, the incumbents would never approve of that. They're in office. They're the ones who would pass the law. Even equal amount. I talked to John Dingell once about this, and he was totally against it. Well, I do such a great job. Everybody knows how great I am. I should be able to raise whatever amount of money people want to give me and spend whatever amount of money. And I'm not saying he hasn't done a lot of great things, but he doesn't have all the ideas in the world. He's not the only person with ideas, and couldn't he do pretty well nonetheless, even if his challengers got twice as much money as the federal government gave him? I mean, you could go on your record, and he is the incumbent. Even if they had twice as much, it might make him run and scared there, but think of all the rubber chicken dinners he wouldn't have to eat. You know, he wouldn't have to, imagine politicians out there, think of this, if there was public funding at every level, the challengers get twice as much as the incumbents, which means the incumbents better do a really good job while they're in office, because their challenger is going to get twice as much. But that means you don't have to go out and do these ridiculous events all the time for $50 here and a couple $100 there. Now, you probably want to have events anyway, though, just to meet the people,
Well, the advantage of public function goes beyond that. It has to do with fairness and taking corruption out of government. Imagine that you can't buy your influence with anybody by donating big money to them.
Mm-hmm.
You take an election process and handle it like they do in England. Instead of 6 weeks, we could make it 6 months, right?
Yeah.
And then we force locals to have discussion on public television and public radio. You don't need to spend any money.
That's
you
right.
You get the access.
That's right. Yeah, I'm totally in favor of that, is that there's free and equal access time
for
all political candidates on cable in that area and on television. Make them all equal. Why should they have to raise $10 billion? Now, of course, the broadcast
commercial.
That's the commercial,
corruption right there.
Yeah, the commercial stations know that election time, oh, we're going to make a ton of profit this year because all the extra spots that we're going to sell. No, why should they? Don't they get the license from the federal government? Don't they? Aren't they concerned in public service? We'll figure it out. And actually, I, as a telecom professor, I know this is the right thing to do, too. Ban all the 30-second political ads. They are not informative enough. Just like I know a lot more about Brian C. O'Donnell than from any of the four-minute comments he's been allowed to make at these debates. And in 30 minutes, even, I think I'd like to talk to him more. I'd like to talk to every one of these people more to get to know them.
Well, obviously he's an impressive young man.
Well, that's Ned Apigian's opinion there, and not necessarily that of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College. No, Ned, I'm looking at the Times Herald that he brought with him today, and I forgot to bring my, I really did, I'm running out of the house. I had to change my pants. I was at the farmer's market, and it was not only raining there, but the Miller Lite delivery truck came close by the curb I was standing on next to the Bryant lot and got me all wet. So I had to, well, anyway, that's my excuse, folks. But we did talk about the state budget crisis, which is a problem for all of us, and especially our Dearborn Public Schools. How much money are they going to lose? They've been trying to operate under a budget since July 1st, and they still, the state of Michigan has just sort of delayed and extended things, but they... You know, any day now, I think they have until the 20th, if I'm not mistaken, to finally work out the school budget. I mean, they have a tentative extension for everything else and some cuts, I think, already in place. But there's a lot of confusion. A lot of things have not been worked out because they have to make the tentative thing permanent. And they haven't even come up with an idea of what to do about the schools. And our schools are us. Our schools are our kids. Their schools are our future, folks. They should not cut a dime. It's in my humble opinion.
Federal stimulus is probably going to help this year.
The stimulus is going to help the state cover some of the debt for this year, as it turns out.
But not next year.
But not next year. No. So we'll be, you know.
There's in the paper, in the editorial section, there is something about teachers' salaries and the cuts pertaining to the
lawsuit. Yeah, well, again,
I don't know.
Cautionary tale here, folks. They want to cut teachers' salaries because Michigan... we pay the fourth highest in the country average salaries for public school teachers, K-12
who are the
teachers.
First three?
I don't know. They don't say.
Probably New York for sure.
So they say, cut their pay. Well, excuse me, I know a teacher in Texas who gets only $41,000 a year. That's the average pay. They're not living well, okay? $41,000 for a family, anyway, is not too much above the poverty level these days, folks. Shouldn't our teachers be paid a lot more, even in Michigan?
Is that the national average, $41,000?
No, the national average is... it's right here.
Is that Michigan's national average?
I'll get there.
Of all the schools?
The average teacher in the U.S. for 2006-07, the last years that they've tabulated this, was $46,000-something.
That's an entry.
Averaging every teacher's salary.
You either an entry or you're senior level.
No, obviously teachers who are there more years usually get what they call step increases.
So is that based on the entry, you think?
Okay. The average salary. It's probably their average salary for that year, which does go up every year that they're with them automatically. As I said, step increases.
In Michigan, it's like that.
Yeah, and I think it's that way in other states. But it doesn't count EC pay. Some teachers, like especially at the college, where you could teach summer or you could teach at night, that would be extra money.
What does EC mean?
Extra contractual.
Oh.
A contract on top of your basic contract.
I see.
And some teachers
if
have to do
coach,
that, not because
coach.
they're greedy, but because they want to live over the summer with a paycheck coming in, with money coming in. I know my daughter was a teacher in Southfield. She's done the 12 months pay.
Right, you can spread it over.
But that just means a lot less per month, and she's scraping at times. So, folks, even with our pay for K-12 being... As it says here, and this is the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, or Mackinac Center. As I've told you, folks, they are...
Politicians get together on a vacation.
They're a conservative think tank, which I think is an oxymoron. And I'm sorry, that's a bad joke. It means that the adjective doesn't go along with the noun. But you know anything they're going to say, even though, we're researchers, we're academics. It's always going to be fitting the conservative political... agenda. and that's not always bad, but I'm saying I can always predict what they're going to tell you. And why should we cut the teacher salaries? In fact, I have to be selfish here. I grew up in Michigan, but why did I choose to work in Michigan? I did apply to some other states, but I wouldn't apply to Texas. Why? Because they don't pay anything. Okay? They pay so much less. I wanted to have a wage that was at least a living wage. And, you know, okay, college is different than K-12, but comparable in many ways. Especially here in Dearborn, the teachers at Henry Ford Community College and basic salaries are pretty much on the same track. It's a different contract as K-12 teachers. But I chose Michigan as a good teacher who had fantastic grades and great recommendations. I could have gone elsewhere, but of course, Michigan, home state, hometown, I knew it well. But why wouldn't I want to give back to my state, especially if I'm not getting poverty-level wages? You know, so we don't pay our teachers anywhere near enough. No, they shouldn't get, in my humble opinion, a cost reduction. No, they're not living well. In fact, I think it's 46,000. What was it? I just heard about someone who's doing something else in business. And of course, they do have a job. A lot of people don't even have a job, so that's bad. 65,000 a year. Okay, and it was a relatively minor job in business. Wouldn't we all love to have that? But nonetheless, I'm saying there's plenty of jobs out there that make a lot more than teachers, and yet teachers are front line of protection and defense of our kids for their future lives, the future of the society. More education means usually better decisions and a better society to come. In fact, I want to draw your attention, although I'm not going to cover it today. New York Times today, you can go to nytimes.com. Paul Krugman, he's the Nobel Prize winning economist.
Economist.
There we go. He talks about the uneducated and America's real crisis of education, both K-12 with so many dropouts, so many kids that are not graduating, and a lot of people can't afford college. You know, I just found out about Ned. Maybe you remember, too, as a World War II knowledgeable person, I know. After World War II,
right.
Franklin D. Roosevelt, well, it wasn't after. It was like it was still going on because Roosevelt died while the war was still going on.
April of 45.
Yeah. But before he died, about 8 months before, he proposed a second Bill of Rights.
Right.
That he felt
I
should
heard
be.
I story about it.
Yeah, that should was on the national media this week, that should be. He felt should be voted into law.
Health insurance.
Yeah, out of 10-point plan, I don't have it in front of me, can't go over it. One is health insurance for all, which, as we know, John Dingell's father actually introduced the bill shortly after that into the U.S. House of Representatives for, in effect, universal single-payer health care.
Somebody had to introduce in the House, they picked him.
And, right. And, well, he was